making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show. Somebody's watching you and you like
it. Somebody's watching you and you care. I gotta tell you, I gotta wonder if the Trumpites are gonna be thrilled having little spies following them around. Wow. And again, not surprising when you look at this kind of mentality, this kind of authoritarian view. And as I said in the last segment, I don't know how much of this is Trump. I know a lot of it is Bannon. But here's the thing. If you saw last week the non-hand-holding, the non-handshake that went on with President Trump and Angela Merkel, the look on Trump's face, priceless, like a kid who had been taken to the woodshed and now had to face his friends and them knowing that he got his behind whipped. That's what it looked to me. But again, the fact that he sat there, they go, can we get a handshake like every other leader does? And him sitting there just stone-faced, no. Again, shows me that, you know, the question of whether he should be or should not be president, perfectly answered. Should not be. And here to talk about a couple of things, look at that, that behavior and what we can expect. We've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come back. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So did you see this thing with Merkel last week?
I did. It's so shameful. He's like a petulant child.
And, you know, to me, you go, just a handshake. You can't muster that. I mean, it's, I really wish I was a microwave in the room when they had their meeting.
I mean, his ego is so big. His ego is so big that he cannot even show that level of deference or respect to this woman. Now, is that in part because she's a woman and he's, you know, feels intimidated or emasculated by her power? Because at this point, you know, she's sort of the most legitimate leader of the free world that we have. And so you get the sense that just the intimidation factor was so high that all he could really do was just sit there, not make any eye contact, keeping his hands to himself. He also was leaning over. I mean, in some of the pictures, you can actually see that he was leaning away from her, and her body language was very open and actually turning towards him. But he just did not budge at all. And he's just very obstinate in that.
But you look at that and, you know, what message does that send to the rest of the world? What message does that send to, quote unquote, our enemies? What does it send to the Putins of the world? That kind of behavior where, look, on that day, I'd have loved to played poker with that guy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's coming across as very hostile. In part, I think that he believes that to be a demonstration of his strength and his power to sort of have this bad
temper
attitude.
Tantrum.
Exactly.
Throw
exactly.
A public temper tantrum.
Yeah, and I don't think that he recognizes that, you know, in like adult world that, you know, you just don't behave that way. If you sort of juxtapose this with the meeting that he had in the Oval Office with President Obama, and you just think about, I mean, man, this guy went on for months and months and months about Obama being illegitimate and, you know, going to all these great lengths to, you know, find his birth certificate, and that President Obama was still able to sit next to this man, shake his hand, look him in the eye, and be cordial, even though, you know, that Trump's been nothing but ugly to him. So it just shows you a lot about his character or lack thereof.
Well, and it shows you that not everyone should be president. I mean, at the end of the day,
right,
there's some basic protocol, some basic gamesmanship, if you will, that it's not so mm-hmm. much what you say, it's what you don't say, and it's not what you do, it's what you don't do. And what we saw out of Trump last week with Merkel, everything you don't do with diplomacy,
right,
especially with a friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, but she's not a friend to him. And in his mind, it's about him. It's not necessarily about this, you know, historical friendship or bond that's been made between America and Germany for however many years. It's about what is his personal relationship with that particular leader, which is also why his stance towards Russia is very precarious because, you know, traditionally, right, I mean, you know, at least since the Cold War, you know, in recent memory for people, this is somebody who, you know, as Mitt Romney said, is our biggest geopolitical foe. But yet, because he has a cozy relationship personally with Putin, then his whole stance towards him in terms of, you know, his inability to criticize them in any way or you know, kind of stand up behind the sanctions that have been reached, you know, it just goes to show that it's about a personal relationship and how he feels about those individuals in his own mind as opposed to the diplomatic, you know, relations that have been established between the countries over the last few decades.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting to me is this morning on CNN, you had former Republican Congressman David Jolly on, who came out with what people are saying is kind of a shocker, a stunning thing. And maybe for a Republican to say it is stunning, but for the rest of us, it's just kind of common sense. He said, you know, the bigger issue is whether the president is intellectually qualified to be president of the United States. And, you know, he was asked, so you're saying he's not smart enough? And he goes, I think he's learning about his own health care bill by listening to you and Chris in the morning. He does not practice in details nor understand the finer points of domestic or foreign policy. When he throws out a wiretap charge, what does that mean? He went on to say, we know he's lying about that, but he doesn't understand what a FISA court is. He doesn't understand that he just made an allegation of a felony. He doesn't understand that he's crippling the United States on the world stage, that he speaks to more than credibility. That speaks to intellect. And you had Rick Santorum jump to Trump's defense, and you go, wait a second. The guy just told the truth.
But admitting that, I think, for the Republican Party is so difficult because as soon as a lot of people in the party start feeling this way and start expressing those thoughts, then, you know, the avalanche is going to pick up even more steam. I mean, his approval is already underwater and it just keeps getting worse as each week goes on. And so, again, as we've talked about, you know, there still is this contingent of supporters or, you know, party line people who they just cannot admit that he has any faults, because then it becomes, okay, well, did we make a mistake as an entire party?
Yes.
And they have to. Yes, they did. Absolutely. But they cannot admit that, you know, and it is very narcissistic. You know, sort of globally for the party, but I also think that is also an extension of Donald Trump himself, the narcissistic tendency to believe that one is always right and everything is other people's fault, and they just understood it wrong or they just don't have all the right information. It cannot possibly be that he's just saying wildly inappropriate and false things. It has to be that he's still right somehow, and maybe we just don't have all the information yet. They just cannot admit defeat or being wrong.
It's mind-blowing to me because I look at this, I look at this guy, and the reality is there's nothing presidential about him. And
nothing
again, I keep going back to the meeting with Merkel. That behavior, I don't know how anyone can look at that moment and go, yeah, that is the image of a world leader. Again, the petulant child keeps coming back. You know, all of those frames are, you know, keep popping up. And I go, you know, what happens when we're really honestly and truthfully faced with a true crisis? What does that child do?
Well, that child, I think, if we think about the Bush doctrine and sort of compare this idea of shoot first, ask questions later in terms of military strategy. And again, it didn't feel the same because I think, you know, the sort of diplomatic pomp and circumstance of we're going to, you know, our allies, and we're putting this thing together, and we're working with other people to wage this war, it doesn't look as bombastic or belligerent or bellicose in that way, because, you know, I mean, even though for a lot of us it still does, but I think when you're dealing with people who subscribe to a very authoritarian mindset, again, that's what they want. I mean, they want shoot first, ask questions later. They want a president, an American president, that, you know, as they said in 2009, doesn't go on a worldwide apology tour. And so a lot of those diplomatic bonds that were broken as a result of the 8 years of George W. Bush and his very militaristic strategy in terms of dealing with world leaders, even though he wasn't necessarily mean, that was the position of our forces, of our military. And so I think, you know, internationally, we were still viewed as a very bellicose nation and as a very immature nation in terms of how we were solving our conflict.
Right.
But now what you have is a stance, obviously, with the budget that's going to be heavy on defense, that is, again, a prelude to this militaristic stance. But then also you have a leader attached to it who has a terrible attitude, who throws temper tantrums. And so I think that it's basically just an escalation of what we've already seen from the Republican Party, but just with way more attitude and less window dressing.
Yeah, but I mean, to be honest, though, George W. Bush makes Trump look like, the Bush years look like top diplomacy compared to this guy.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, it's amazing that Trump is just so terrible on all these fronts, that it actually somehow makes George W. Bush look better, which man, he's got to be feeling pretty good right now.
Yeah, it makes him look intellectually curious, makes him look like
it does.
I mean, but here's the thing, and in George W. Bush's, defense, he did have his father, who was, in my view, whether you agreed with him or disagreed with him, was diplomatic, was a, and I hate to say a reasonable president, but was semi-reasonable.
Right.
And I understand that's a whole different era, but, in looking back at that, somewhat reasonable and insane, how far the Republican Party has gone off of this cliff, that's what's scary to me.
Mm-hmm. And I think also, what strikes me as a psychiatrist and as somebody who deals, at the micro level with emotional instability, one of the things I've always said about this election is that there is interpersonal dysfunction that's happening at the micro level, that when you multiply that, household by household, out to county level, out to state level, there are, again, millions of people that in their own personal lives, the way that they handle conflict is exactly the way Donald Trump handles conflict. And so while some of us can go, who maybe are better emotionally developed, can say, okay, I shouldn't behave in this way, even though I don't like this person, I understand that there are all these cameras around and the expectation is that I need to get along with this person.
Yep.
Let me actually just go along and do the obligatory handshake and do the, niceties that everyone expects, A lot of us will do that, but then there's also a lot of us that won't. And it's why people are, unable to keep their job. They're unable to keep their relationships. Their children are not disciplined. And so it filters down, I think, into our society. And that's why you still have people who are fervently supporting it, even though it's very tacky.
No, I mean, I understand reaching across the table and wanting to strangle somebody. I get that.
Right.
No, understand. I understand that sometimes, as my grandfather always said, every once in a while you need to slap somebody upside the back of the head to make a citizen out of them. I get
but how
that.
How many times have you done that in real life?
Maybe once, twice, tops.
Right. But this is a guy who, his whole reality show was just being able to sit in front of someone and go, "You're fired," right? And be, just very bombastic about it and provocative. And that's what people like about him, that he's sort of this, shot caller, and he's brash, and he's just going to say how what he thinks and how he feels, no matter who cares about it. And so there is an element of that it is his id, as we call it. The part of our psyche that just goes, I'm going to do whatever the heck I want to do. And without this super ego influence, whether that's a parental figure or the, constraints of social norms, his id is just saying, I'm going to do what I want, and I don't necessarily care.
But here's the thing, Jane. I mean, that's his entire life. I mean, when, mm-hmm. From the beginning till now, he's never been told no. He's, you listen to some of those tapes, I just go up and grab whatever I want. When you're raised with that mentality, that manifests itself in what we're seeing. So why are we surprised when he behaves like we knew he behaved for 70 years before this?
Right. That's my question at this point. And I probably ask it a million times. I probably asked it a million times on Twitter at this point. Because I don't necessarily know if people are surprised by the behavior as much as they are surprised by his reluctance to rein it in any way. I think people had this mindset going into it that, like, okay, he's not the president yet, and he's still behaving in this way. He's still tweeting ad nauseum. But as soon as January 20th rolls around, somehow people just sort of thought that,
switch.
By noon, yeah, there was a switch was going to be flipped, and that he was going to suddenly, put his phone away, not ever tweet under Real Donald Trump account again, not ever be this brash reality TV personality. And spoiler alert, that's just who he is. And that is not going to change whether he is the president, whether he's the, lead guy of The Apprentice, or whether he's just running his businesses. That's just who this man is. And either we set boundaries, and we say, hey, this is just not a guy that is appropriate. We tried. This is not appropriate for our leader and our president to be behaving this way. And we start actually holding him accountable and making some consequences for the things that he's doing that are unlawful and also just, beyond what we would expect from a decorum aspect.
Again, I keep coming back to this frame of being parents of an unruly child, and everything you've laid out is what you see in those self-help books. Do you have a child who's prone to outburst? And it sounds the exact same thing, but we're talking about the leader of the free world. We're talking about a guy in one of the most in the most powerful position in the world. How do you rein that in? Who's going to say no, Donald? Who's going to take his phone? Who's going to be the one to put him in his place?
Nobody's going to do that. The people that are, unfortunately, the people who are around him are handling the crisis as best as they can. And I am not saying that they're handling it well, but they are essentially in a boat that has sprung a leak, and they're trying to fish water out of the boat, but there's no plug on the hole.
Yeah,
so there's still water coming up in the boat. And again, they are trying to mitigate the crisis as best they can, but they're not doing a very good job. And so, the other day he had a rally that he was actually 2 hours late to the rally because he was so upset about these, the DOJ reports and everything coming out about the wiretapping claim being uncorroborated and unsubstantiated. And he's so angry that for 2 hours, he's late. He's keeping these people waiting who presumably are his biggest fans. And his staff is just kind of, trying to not tell him information and, keep things from him because he's just so furious that, and they have no way to calm him down, that they just have to wait until, the storm passes so that he can even carry on with his job.
Can't they get him Jell-O or something? A little ice cream?
I have a 2-year-old, and my 2-year-old can keep it together better than this, which is actually pretty shameful. But it very much reminds me of, you know, dealing with a terrible two or a terrible three. And, you know, has he had a nap? Has he had a snack? You know, do we need to change his diaper? You know, there's just a lot of behaviors that are happening that for an adult person, we shouldn't have to be, you know, sort of trying to figure out how to placate him and how to pacify him so that he can just do his job.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest with you. I think I'm okay with autopilot for the next, you know, three years and 10 months.
Yeah, I mean, at this point,
just do nothing.
It's a cluster because not only is he waging these battles, these emotional battles with other world leaders, he's also waging these battles with the establishment Republican Party. And so, you know, while they're, you know, it's not in concert. None of it is synchronized. Instead of it being a party that is unified behind the president's agenda and legislation, you know, being, you know, formatted and put together between the Republican Congress and him, actually they're working in two different places. And so now you have Trump Care that now Breitbart is vilifying. Breitbart is waging a war with Paul Ryan. We know Breitbart is obviously Bannon and is very much linked to Trump's administration. So then the question becomes, you know, is Trump trying to sabotage the Republican Party as well as everything else that he's trying to sort of sabotage? Because I understand that they don't like it because it's not radical and extreme enough. But yet and still, they're not even able to present a united front so that at least people go, okay, this is an administration I can trust. So I just think it's an all-out war emotionally with anyone who is not lockstep with every single thing toddler-in-chief, instability-in-chief wants to do right
wow.
now.
Again, who would have thought we'd have been in this position? Well, I think most of us after Election Day. So nothing surprising in this camp. Last question I've got for you. To keep the sanity, because I can't tell you how many of my friends and people that I know are going, I just can't take it anymore.
I know.
I'm just dropping out.
Yeah. We have to think about this much in the same way that we think about other crises that we've experienced nationally. You know, when you think about 9/11, when you think about Katrina, I think for many of us, there came a point where you couldn't really tolerate seeing those planes crash into the Twin Towers one more time. Or you couldn't really tolerate seeing all of this water and people waiting around in water and babies crying. You know, at some point, there's an overload of trauma. And it is very traumatizing, and I want to be very clear about that. This is very traumatizing to see a president who is not leading through a very stressful time. You know, in terms of healthcare, again, you know, this is something that's on everybody's mind. You know, I have patients personally who, you know, we spend, you know, 10 minutes of their visit just kind of, you know, processing their fear and their anxiety about losing their health insurance. And so, you know, we do have to balance getting the information and being an informed citizenry and remaining engaged, but also practicing self-care and not, you know, riding this roller coaster of trauma. And it's very difficult. I mean, it is very difficult because this is who our president is. And every single day there is a new, you know, corruption allegation. There's a new temper tantrum. There's a new thing to be kind of outraged and disgusted and alarmed by. And so as much as you can, you know, tell your friends, tell your listeners, your family, you know, it's good to stay informed, but also please do things that, you know, make you feel good. Help your community, you know, go help people who don't have a television to even be, you know, hanging on every word that Trump says. Go volunteer, go donate blood, go do something that helps you just kind of remain engaged with the good of our society and humanity, yeah. Because this is just too much for us to take.
Yeah, go live your life, but still talk to others, you know, have those, and kind of like a nationwide group therapy session.
Absolutely, absolutely. Stay engaged, support each other, you know, talk about your fears, talk about your anxieties, and try as much as you can to find solutions that may not fix the whole problem. I mean, obviously, as individuals, we cannot get this man out of the Oval Office.
Not fast
but,
enough.
But how can we be collective, and how can we mobilize as a community to get some of these things taken care of? Because I do think that ultimately that will make us feel better to put the crisis to an end.
There you go. Good stuff. Jane, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Have a good week.
Always great talk with you, our good friend Propane Jane. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.